भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। अहम समाधाय, अहम समाधाय मनो यथाहनः संकर्षणस्तच्चरणारविन्दे त्वद्वज्रामो लुलितग्राम्यपाशो गतिमुनेयाम्यपविद्धलोकः। Translation purport by Srila Prabhupada. By the force of your thunderbolt, I shall be freed of material bondage and shall give up this body and this world of material desires. Fixing my mind upon the lotus feet of Lord Shankarshan, I shall attain the destination of such great sages as Narad Muni, just as Lord Shankarshan has said. Purport. The words Aham Samadhaya Manaha indicate that the most important duty at the time of death is to concentrate one's mind. If one can fix his mind on the lotus feet of Krishna, Vishnu, Shankarshan, or any Vishnu Murti, his life will be successful. To be killed while fixing his mind at the lotus feet of Shankarshan, Vritrasur asked Indra to release his Vajra or thunderbolt. He was destined to be killed by the thunderbolt given by Lord Vishnu. There was no question of its being baffled. Therefore, Vritrasur requested Indra to release the thunderbolt immediately, and he prepared himself by fixing his mind at the lotus feet of Krishna. A devotee is always ready to give up his material body, which is described herein as Gramya Pash, the rope of material attachment. The body is not at all good. It is simply a cause of bondage to the material world. Unfortunately, even though the body is destined for destruction, fools and rascals invest all their faith in the body and are never eager to return home, back to Godhead. Hare Krishna. They continue to read this most incredible story of the pastime of Vritrasur's deliverance and his imminent ascent to the spiritual sky. Vritrasur is at this point of time so close to the spiritual world. In fact, we can say he's already in the spiritual world. Because you are where your mind is and not where your body is. And Vritrasur is already in Samadhi. He has fixed his mind in a position of infallibility on an object which never fails to give the desired success, the most powerful boat to carry us across the ocean of birth and death, namely the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, in effect, he is already in the spiritual sky. What is separating him only is this material coil the material frame which, in which he is living, the soul is living. But effectively he is already there. And we can see, we can perceive, even with our dull senses and mind, in a conditioned state, that how the intensity of his desire is mounting. We can see as the slokas are going, he is becoming more and more restless actually, practically. He's becoming very, very eager, very intensely desiring that, please, he's begging, urging, pleading, Indra, kill me soon. Kill me now. Kill me immediately. Where do you ever find such parallels in the material or in any other literature? Where somebody is telling somebody else, kill me right now. A friend of mine was in, he went to look for a job and settled from Bombay to Noida, Delhi. And he was going through some road which is a little lonely. And suddenly, it's a very infamous place for dacoits. He was carrying his bag with a lot of documents like passports and important documents for his. And suddenly his cycle rickshaw slowed down in a particular area where between two lights there was little darkness. And four daggers just appeared in front of him from behind. And the cyclist is there standing and he's looking at those four daggers. Suddenly, you can imagine the situation. He was not able to orient himself. What is this and what is happening? And then looked behind, there are four people wanted to kill him. There was some hand fight and this and that, and some of them grabbed his bag and ran away. But imagine somebody standing with a thunderbolt in front of you. Not just a simple dagger. Not just a small Rampuri chaku or something. Even that is enough to just kill us immediately. When you see that knife in front of you, you are almost dead. Because, it is sure death. You cannot fight somebody with a knife like that. We will not say, yes, yes, come ahead, kill me. I'm going to now meditate on Krishna and go back to the spiritual sky. I'm a devotee of the Lord. I'm initiated. And I know from Vitaratsu's story that I'm supposed to do this right now. And this story will help me too. I'm going to fix now. You come and poke me in my abdomen. We cannot imagine this. There's no parallel to this story. Ever. There's no na bhutana bhavishyati type of story. And here is the most powerful man, one of the most powerful beings in the universe, Indra. Carrying the most invincible weapon in his hand, which is sure death. Vishnu's weapon, not a simple chaku. It is thunderbolt. It is sure death. And he's saying, come. Come soon and kill me. What level of confidence? What level of shraddha? What level of surety that this is my last few moments in this world? How very fixed he must have been in his meditation to have the complete faith that it is just a matter of going this body up and then I'm gone, finished. It's almost like a lover who's so intensely desired to meet his beloved. You can see the love of Dhritarashtra is so intense. He's just waiting to meet his Lord. He cannot just... every moment is like 12 years or more or less for him. Every moment Indra is delaying, he said, come on, do it. So Indra is already still, not very sure. He's a little hanky-panky and he's a little... He doesn't know whether this is really going to work or not. And I don't want to be embarrassed again. Because already once I'm embarrassed with my mace. And this will work. So he's saying, no, come on, do it. This is the intense attachment between a purified soul and the pure Lord. And the intense attachment, like a magnet. Like a magnet getting attracted to the all-powerful magnet. That attraction in Vritasu's heart has manifested. Even through that ugly, grotesque, monstrous body, we see a spark of a beautiful heart filled with no attachment to this world, with no desires for selfish motivations, but the single most pure desire only to be with his beloved Lord and serve him in a mood which can please him. It's an amazing thing. In this particular purport, Prabhupada is giving some special words like fools and his all famous word rascals, which often uses in his lectures and his purports to chastise all of us in this world who are putting their faith in the body. This is not only for the, this harsh words of rascal are not for the materialist only, but it is also for mixed devotees like us, because we are also having a lot of faith still in this body. Is it not true? We have so much faith that this body actually is still going to provide pleasure to me. It is still a source of my comfort, my pleasure, my peace, my satisfaction. My fulfillment in life is all dependent on this body. And so it's definitely very dear to us. And we, even in a devotional way, we are living our life, but still the faith is very much strong there. But it is the constant theme of Prabhupada to again and again smash. Essentially, preaching in Krishna consciousness revolves around two themes. Whether it's preaching to the materialists outside or preaching to ourselves, preaching to our amongst our fellow devotees when we discuss, is basically around oriented around two things. One is to dismantle our faith in material life and the pleasures it promises. And second is the glorification, the positive glorification of the Lord and his pastimes. These are the basic two themes of any preaching engagement. That we want to systematically, on behalf of Prabhupada's teachings, smash our faith in this world, which is building up very strongly in the modern era. There has never been a time in the world when we had so much faith in the body as the modern people have now. Because, and why is that so? Why do we have so much faith in our body now? Because primarily, modern science has been successful in providing so much vast array of things which can provide gratification to the senses. So there is a huge promise, unlimitedly huge promise, which our grandparents and great-grandparents never had, because practically the science was at its primitive stage. They had only a cart or a bullock cart or something like that to move around. But now every 3 months there is a new car on the hoardings. Swift and Centro and what's on. God only knows how many. Then says, here comes the sun or something like that. You know, they will say, we say Bhagavatam is like the sun, but it's this car. Here comes the sun. Or here she comes. Or something like that, they will say. All these fancy cars are coming. Earlier they used to have this big, huge two-in-ones. I remember a few years back when we went for a Vrindavan Yatra, Vishwaroop Prabhu would do recordings. There is no recording system of this type now. Everything is, fantastic with that antenna and all that. He used to carry a big box of this two-in-one and you put it right in there in front of Maharaj. He said, you speak into this now. And then, you hear it and make some tapes out of it. Huge, grotesque machine. And now you have just small clip, you just put it here. Very fancy. And it's being recorded somewhere else and the clip is here. This is just a matter of 20 years. Everything has changed so much. And now those things are coming so small. I don't know what they're called. Very small. They're so small. Couldn't believe a few years back something like that would come. So, this is what makes the materialists give slogans like this. Dunya mutthi mein. Now imagine, that's a type of false ego and false promise which a materialist is made to feel. That if you have a mobile phone in your hand, it's like having the whole world in your fist. If you can communicate whenever, whatever, with anybody you want in the entire planet, if you can communicate immediately, then you have the power of the entire world in your hands. Therefore, all these fantastic slogans are given. And that so much increases our faith in modern science. because so many things it can do. But there is a second, other picture of the signs which is usually not seen by most people. All the perils it is bringing, or the degradation it is bringing, along the false promises, comes all the negativities. In the world of modern science, in the modern medical field, there's so much promise. Practically every disease you can think of, there is a cure. Or if not a cure, at least a relief factor is there. Any pain, any disease, your joint is spoiled, broken, your knee is worn out, change your joint. Nobody can imagine. You can change your knee joint. You can change your hip joint. You can change it. And if it gets spoiled again, there's a particular alloy which lasts for 10 years, a knee joint. There are people who have changed their joint 3 times. Because they spoiled their joint when they were 45 and they lived till 75. So every 10 years they go for a joint replacement. Now when such a thing is available in this world, imagine how much faith it gives you. Even if my joint is spoiled, broken down, I can get a new joint. If my teeth fall off, I can get new teeth. Anything is provided. So that so much increases our faith in signs. However, when you look at it a little more closely, we find all those promises actually are not really there. For example, there is so much vast area of medications available to destroy the most powerful diseases. But still, a small mosquito can destroy a human being of a body of 150 kilos in one day. One mosquito bite and a 150 kilo heavyweight champ can be killed in less than one day. And we have seen that with our eyes. Huge people coming, mosquito bite, and one parasite in the body, falciparum malaria. And nothing in the world can save them. Liver is eaten away, brain is eaten away, lungs are eaten away, kidneys eaten away, finished, dead. Those who look closely at science can see that there are dark clouds in the horizon. In fact, they're already above us. And if there are some drugs now for malaria, there are powerful viruses which have been released by material nature. Please note that as man is becoming more and more and more and more sinful, degraded, deeply entrenched in sense gratification, material nature is waging a biological warfare against man. We talk of biological warfare of terrorists against human beings. But even more powerful is Maya Devi herself, who is waging warfare against man. She releases different viruses every few years, which man can never, never, never overcome. When I was a student, medical student, we had remotely heard of a virus called dengue virus. We only read it. I mean, professors never saw it. Professors had not known anything about it. It was only in the books. This is in the mid-80s, 20 years back. It was something which we never bothered about. Who cares for that virus? There was not going to be a question on that, definitely, because nobody knows what to ask about this virus because it is such a rare entity. But today, even a layman knows dengue virus. In 20 years, that virus has spread to millions of people all over the world. No cure. And there are a whole list of such viruses waiting to attack mankind. They're all called as viruses for hemorrhagic fever. That means if you get that fever in your body, you will bleed to death. That virus goes in your body, you start bleeding from your tongue, your mouth, your belly. You just bleed, bleed, and bleed, and bleed till you die. A miserable death. And nothing can save you. And there are at least such 10 viruses waiting. Already in some countries it has come. And modern biologists are warning us that this is going to come very soon among general masses of people. So when you look at science closely, it is a scary situation. And we can say there is no just remedy for this. while we are battling with AIDS and trying to find some cure on AIDS, there are so many viruses which are going to destroy us. Why do we put so much faith in this body? On one hand, materialists are saying, yes, enjoy, enjoy, enjoy. But a devotee is so much in a better position because he's been told very plain and simple, Kamala Dala Jala Jivana Talamala. In one line, the acharyas can tell you, please dismantle all your faith in this body. For this body is as perishable, as imminently perishable, as much as a leaf is on a lotus, a drop of water is on a lotus leaf. Now, how much time does it take for a water to slip off from a leaf? A small wind, a small breeze, little breeze, and then the water is off. And that's how the perishable the body is. As I was saying, this viruses. In the morning, you are all right. You go from your home. You bid your wife and children goodbye and said, see you in the evening. You may not come back in the evening if you get a fever in the train. By the time you reach your office, you are dead. You can never even come back in the evening. That's how transcendent this body is. That's how flickering the power of this body is. It is no good. And still we have so much faith in this body. Even when we as devotees use these scientific gadgets, the other day Ranan Maharaj was warning us, when we devotees, we don't realize, but actually, even we are all putting a lot of faith in this material science. And it was Prabhupada's very specific preaching to Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj. Because he could see that this is the man who is a scientist who is convinced against the limitations of science. Even though he's a first class scientist who's wedded to a life of living a pure science or life of, you know, which is embedded in, you know, theories and hypotheses and experimentation and all that advanced scientific theories, but he is convinced at the same time of the perils of science. The Prabhupada used him as a madhyam, as a medium to preach in such a powerful way so that we lose our faith in science. Because till we keep our faith in science and faith in this material body, we will never develop faith in the blue boy standing on the altar. Till we keep our faith in this world, that yes, I can enjoy. Yes, it is dukhalayam. And I've said this many times, and I've heard it many times, and I've read it many times. But somehow I can, you know, find my way through it. I can make a little bit of sukhalaya at least. We feel that we have that fine-tuned intelligence as a devotee where we can somehow navigate ourselves in such a way that we can bypass this dukhalayam theory and something can be available for us which a materialist will not get their hands on. We as devotees can navigate, you know, because we are a little smarter than the materialist. But it is not true. It is not true. Therefore, we never find Prabhupada. This is one difference between Prabhupada and many of the spiritual teachers. If you look at it, there are so many spiritual teachers in the world, including our country also. But with the vehemence with which Prabhupada preached against life of happiness in this world, he never did that. You now find in any purport of Prabhupada giving us some hope, some solace of happiness in this world. Not even one purport I can think of where Prabhupada said, yeah, it's nice to be in this world, you know, just have to chant Hare Krishna, be pious and do some Archa Vigraha Seva and, you know, eat prasadam only, be healthy, do some exercise and do some pranayam yogasanas and you'll be happy. Prabhupada never gives even one purport of any glimmer of a ray of a hope that you can be happy by living in this world. Many of the spiritualists will say, it's bad, but it's not so bad. If you do this, and this, and this, and this, you can still be happy in this world and in the world in the next. But Prabhupada immediately says, A Brahma Bhuvana Loke Punaravartina Arjuna. Mam Upetyate Kaunteya Punajamna Vidyate. He again and again, this is one of Prabhupada's very, very often quoted slokas, in fact. Prabhupada said, not only forget the earth planet, that may... If you think that is promising, I tell you, listen to me, Prabhupada says, even Brahmaloka also, to Pataloka, none of these planets. So Prabhupada gives us not even one farthing of a hope to keep for any pleasure in this world. And he always bolsters our faith, strengthens our faith, that the real happiness is only in the spiritual sky. And that stage Vidyasura has reached. Vidyasura has reached the stage where nothing can allure him to stay back. No promise of this world will hold him back. He is fixed in his resolve to go to the spiritual sky. So, we as practicing devotees have to always keep hearing stories, maybe sometimes from newspapers or from people around us, of how it is a hopeless situation. Only when we lose hope in material life, we will see hope in spiritual life. We cannot put our legs in two boats. Generally, that a mixed devotee is, Indra is, in this place, like Radhana Maharaj was saying on the Sunday feast, Sunday program, morning program, that this is what Indra is. He is a devotee. His one leg is in the spiritual world, sort of, he understands, I have to serve Krishna. But his one leg is firmly fixed also in the material world. And this whole story is basically to bring out a contrast. Bring out a strong contrast between what it means to be a pure devotee means no faith. A state of complete faithlessness in material life and utter, simply, implicit faith in Krishna consciousness. That is Vitrasura. And we look at, when you look at our consciousness, when you look at my, when I look at my consciousness, I so much am similar to Indra type of personality. Where I still so much, I have some inclination to serve Krishna. I know I must serve him, I must preach and I must read and I must do this and you must, but there is still a lot of hope of getting some pleasures from this world. So, we can compare ourselves, where do we match up more with? Either we are on Indra's side or we are Vitrasura's side. We cannot be in between the two. And usually we will find that there is a lot of similarity between us and Indra. And we laugh at Indra so many times, is it not? And the moment Indra's name comes, oh Indra, you know, yeah, we knew he is going to be up to some mischief. Whether he's, you know, going with Satyabhama and, you know, here is a Pareja tree and fight with Krishna and then creates Aditi's kundals and, you know, lusty desires and he allures Gautam Rishi's wife, Ahilya. And when we hear all these pastimes of Indra, we just say, oh, yeah, I mean, Indra. And we know he's like that, always like that. But when you look at, when you scrutinize our own consciousness, these are potentials which I will also feel like doing. I also feel like doing the same thing which Indra does. And then we are ashamed of ourselves, of calling ourselves as devotees on the path of pure devotional service, and we have still so many mixed desires inside. So this story is designed basically to help us make a decisive track in our life. Am I going to stick around with Indra type of consciousness and keep on practicing Krishna consciousness in the slow pace, gradually? Or am I going to take a fast track, a track which will make me like Vritrasura, not a demon like him in the external sense, but make a Vritrasura where I have just no faith of being happy in this world. It is basically to help us to make this contrast and stick to that path. Because if Prabhupada is saying that you can go back home back to Godhead in one lifetime, then we cannot take the track of Indra. Because that track will keep us like Indra, like Indra's life. What is Indra's life? Indra's life is equal to 71 Manus. And that's a long time of being in the material world. Millions of years will pass. So if we take the Indra's track in our Krishna consciousness, that means we are chanting, we are falling for principles, but we harbor still our secret desires. We don't reveal it to the people around, but we still harbor those desires inside, and often we practice fulfilling those desires also. We don't really give them up from within the heart. We don't just give them up. We keep them dear to our heart. And if you want to take Prabhupada's formula, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy, where he's promising us the spiritual world in one lifetime. There is a story of Prabhupada, one of our Bhurijan Prabhu's wonderful wife, Jagatarini Mataji. She was we remember she was an actress in her, before she became a devotee in the ISKCON movement. And at one time, when she joined the movement, she was a very famous actress in Australia. And then she was inspired by Krishna conscious devotees and she joined the movement. And then she started taking pleasure in washing the pots in the kitchen, in the deity kitchen. And she was finding so much great pleasure in doing that. And then somebody spotted her and with a sari and with her head, you know, covered with a pallu and having this bindi and, you know, well-clad, fully covered body. And said, she's the same person. And they took an interview of her. And there was a very big news coverage of two parts of her life. What she was before, what she looked like before in her glamorous days as a famous actress, you know, working with all these big, big actors who are like demigods. And the other side of the paper was the another picture of her as a wonderful Vaishnavi. With a simple, chaste, bright, effulgent face. And she didn't want, somebody told her that this news release has come. But she was really feeling shy. I hope nobody gives this paper to Srila Prabhupada to read. But somebody did that. Somebody took the paper and gave it to Prabhupada to read. And Prabhupada saw this. And she was very embarrassed. Prabhupada looked at the picture and said, and she was comparing the two pictures. I said, in this picture, your picture as a devotee, you look so much peaceful, so much more happier. As against this one, where you're just trying to pretend to be happy. And then he said these words, which are very important for all of us to remember. He said, I don't know if he mentioned her name, but said, Jagatarani Mataji, just give this one life to Krishna. Give this one life, that's all. And you will attain eternal life. That's the bottom line which we have to remember from Prabhupada's divine mouth. We may have lived so many lives in this world. We don't even know how many lives we have lived in this world. We've been in the material world, it is said, for time immemorial. But if we can resolve with firm conviction that this life, when I have the best of all situations in my life, the best of association, the best of spiritual masters to guide me, the best of temples, the best of philosophy, the best of all that I need, all the ingredients which I need to go back home have been provided thoroughly, completely. Absolutely nothing left behind. We have nothing to complain that if I had this in Krishna consciousness, I would have, you know, I'd be a little more, you know, more serious. Everything which we need. Even years ago when Radhana Maharaj was speaking to the brahmacharis, he said this, I remember. Generally, we don't get to hear the tapes which he speaks to the brahmacharis, but this one I got. So years ago, where he talks to the brahmacharis when he was leaving for America, and this was his parting dialogue with his dear servants, disciples, followers, the inmates of the ashram. And he said the same thing. He said, all that you need to make your life perfect and go back to Godhead is being provided in this ashram. Everything you need. Just take this opportunity and go back home, back to Godhead. When I heard that, I could see it was a common message. It wasn't only for the saffron clad people. Even the grihasthas in the congregation have the same thing. Everything which a grihastha needs in his life to go back to the spiritual world is being provided. All the social security, the marriage board, the Yamuna ka Kinara, the housing societies, a nice hospital, a school for his children, everything which a devotee, a grihastha devotee will need, everything brahmachari would need, everything he needs in a superlative quality is being provided almost on a golden platter. All that we do have to do is just receive it with a grateful heart. That's all. We need to do nothing else. Just keep on receiving with a grateful heart what is being provided boundlessly by the Vaishnavas and by the society, Krishna conscious society. We can't just keep on receiving this. We can be sure. We can be sure. And soon we will develop the same eagerness which the Rasura is having. And even then, if our body is stumped with cancer, is stumped with paralysis, is stumped with some incurable disease, we will not lament. Because our promises for life's enjoyment have been broken by a paralyzed body, a defamed, a disfigured body because of cancer. We will not feel that all our hopes are destroyed because my body is destroyed with disease. We will still have unlimited faith and unlimited hope. Because we know that something far superior is waiting for us. This body is designed for pain. Prabhupada says very clearly here. It is designed for pain. How mercifully Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita also. Yahi samsparshaja bhoga dukha yona evate adiyantamanta konteya na teshuramate buddhaha. And we are supposed to be buddhaha. Every devotee in the ISKCON movement is supposed to be buddhaha because we accept the Sankirtan movement. Sumedhasa means only that person who Sumedha will accept Chaitanya Mahaprabhu perform Sankirtan. That is given in the 11th canto. We know Krishna Tusha Krishna, that shloka says that we are Sumedha. And if we are really Sumedha, then according to this particular shloka, we should not take any pleasure in the temporary things of this world. Because they're all only based on the flickering happiness of the senses. Sparshaja. It's temporary pleasures. The more and more and more and more we take pleasure in devotional service. There is a wonderful story of how once when Sarvam Bhattacharya, he was in the morning, Mahaprabhu Chaitanya went to Jagannath temple and then he went to Sarvam Bhattacharya's house. It's very close from the temple. And he knocked at the door. It was just before sunrise. Sarvam Bhattacharya got up. And he said, Krishna, Krishna. Mahaprabhu could hear that from outside. And as soon as he saw Mahaprabhu has come to the door, he ran and opened the door. And Mahaprabhu was carrying a potli of garland and Mahaprasad of Jagannath Swami. And Bhattacharya gave him a nice asan to sit. And the Lord sat down, Bhattacharya sat down, and he opened his portal and said, this is Mahaprasad of Lord Jagannath. Immediately, Sarvam Bhattacharya took that Mahaprasad and chanting prayers, he gulped it down. And Mahaprabhu was so very pleased. Here is a great Brahmin who is a strict follower of rituals, Vedic rituals. He has not taken his bath, he has not cleaned his mouth, not any of these morning rituals. And he's already eating before doing all this. So seeing this, Mahaprabhu said, today my life is successful. I'm already in the spiritual world, Mahaprabhu says. For I have seen that you have developed faith, implicit faith in Krishna, in Krishna's Mahaprasad. And then the Lord goes away. Afterwards, Sarvam Bhattacharya takes his bath and goes to a temple. And then having met the Lord, his heart is inspired to write something. That time Mukunda and Jagadan Pandit are with him. And he writes two extremely special verses. And gives that verse after writing it on a palm leaf to Jagadan and the Pandit. Mukunda Datta takes that palm leaves from his hand and reads them. And immediately he goes to the wall of the house and writes these two slokas on the wall of the house. And then gives his palm leaves back to Jagannath Pandit. And as Ramad Bhattacharya had desired, these palm leaves are delivered to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Mahaprabhu reads those verses which are glorifying him. He tears those palm leaves immediately. But the world has not lost those special verses because they are on the wall of Sarvam Bhattacharya. And one of these verses is this famous verse. What is that? Which is that verse, Prabhu? Sikshamrita Ekha Purusha Purana. Sarira Dhari. What is the first line? Vairagya Vidyani Bhakti Yoga. Sikshamrita Ekha Purusha Purana. Sikrisha Chaitana Sarira Dhari. Kripam Udiryasta Maham Prapadya. So in this beautiful verse, Sarambhattacharya revealed the glory of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he said, just by having faith in Lord Chaitanya, who was teaching his own devotional service, he is Krishna himself, automatically this vairagya will come. What is our problem in material life, right, in our spiritual life? That we don't have sufficient vairagya. We are still attached to the things of this world. That this sloka teaches us that having implicit faith in the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, vairagya vidya nija bhakti yoga, this detachment will automatically come. So for us, the followers of Hare Krishna movement, it is very simple. All we need to do is serve the lotus feet of Gaur and Nitai. Therefore, on one hand, acharyas say, kamala dala jala jala jivana talamala, that means have no faith in the material world. Other side they say, bhajo bhajo bhai, chetra nitai, sudrida vishvashakori. That means no vishwas in material life and pleasures it promises, all the hoardings, all the billboards, all the advertisements, all the newspaper ads, all the promises which they are giving us, have no faith in all of them because it's a lie. Maya is the biggest liar. She's the biggest cheat. All the lawyers must have been great disciples of Maya Devi. Even they also speak lies. But Maya Devi is a liar. She just gives all false promises to cheat us. But the acharyas, Prabhupada said very clearly, went to America, please believe me, he said to the disciples, I have not come here to cheat you. Because the whole world is out to cheat you. And how many of us in the material world, when we interact with devotees, we are not cheated. But how many of us, when you interact with the outside world, we are cheated. You go to buy sabji in the world, you are cheated in your sabji also. They promise you 1 kilo, but they give you 150 grams. Cheated, every time cheated. Even the smallest things you attract in the material world, everyone who is attracted with the outside world knows that people are out there to cheat you. One patient just came a few days back. The Gujarati gentleman, he is doing his business with grey cloth. He gives thread in Bhindi Bazaar and they turn it into cloth, grey cloth. That means unprinted cloth. And all his business people are, Yamanas and Marwadis. The people who gives. And he's been doing business for them for many, many years now. And suddenly he came to the ICU with a blood pressure of 250 by 150. Now those who know what BP actually is, normal BP is 120 by 80. And this man had 250 by 150. That means he was on the verge of death. He could have just collapsed and his balloon would have burst in half a second. And of course he was salvaged immediately by proper treatment. And then I went to him to meet him and said, what happened? Why is something wrong with you? How can your BP shoot up so much? Said, I was cheated. I gave so much material for being weaved into cloth to the fellows who will then sell it for me. I have been giving the material for the last so many years and they were giving my payments. But this fellow cheated me of 12 lakhs of rupees. He sunk it. And a severe fight with him just day before yesterday. A very strong verbal fight. I was so much disturbed by it. The blood pressure is 250 by 150. Why is he suffering? Because he was cheated by somebody else. So again and again we find this theme. Prabhupada's Guru Maharaj said this. This world is full of cheaters and cheated. So that means everything in the material world is out to cheat us. Including Maya Devi. She cheats us to make you feel that this body is designed for pleasure. So these verses of Prabhupada and their purport help us so much to not have any faith And as Prabhupada said himself to the New Yorkers, please believe me, I have not come here to cheat you. Implicit faith in the words of Guru, Sadhu and Shastra are our only shelter. Yesterday, there was a pastime between, I think, Gurudas Prabhu and Srila Prabhupada. And he went up to, we'll end this, today's discussion by with this words, with this small pastime of Prabhupada, which we can take as a carry-home message. He asked Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada is a scholar. He knows all the scriptures. Practically all of them are on his tongue. So Prabhupada, which is the most important verse in all the Vedic literatures? Very, very wonderful question to ask, because there are so many verses in the Gita, in the Bhagavad, in Chaitanya-charitamrita, Upanishads, Puranas, so many slokas are there, which is the most important verse in all the scriptures. He wanted to know from the greatest acharya ever born, like Prabhupada. He would tell us the most important verse. And then Prabhupada said, what do you think? And he said, Prabhupada, I think it is Haririnam, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalau Nasteva. Obviously, it is very, very important. We know that. It is quoted by Mahaprabhu so many times. And we also worship this verse, Brihannadiya Purana. Prabhupada said, yes, very important verse. But who gives you faith in Harinam? He asked the counter question. Harinam is important. But who gives you that faith in Haririnam? And then he quoted this verse. Yasya deve para bhakti yatha deva tatha gurau taseta gathitai artha prakashante mahatmanaha. One was implicit faith. We are talking about faith today. Prabhupada is talking about faith. And those who have faith in the wrong thing are fools and rascals, according to Srila Prabhupada. Right? Prabhupada is saying that one was implicit faith in whom? In the words of Sri Guru and the holy scriptures. To him all the imports, all the purports of all the Vedic literatures are automatically revealed from within the heart. Prakashante, in the heart of a great soul who has become now a Mahatma. So our faith is in this verse. Our faith is in the words of Srila Prabhupada, the Guru, the Sadhus and the Shastra. When we have faith in these three and disbelieve all the propaganda of this world, which is being made so powerfully through the media, then we will never get swayed away into feeling that I can be happy in this world. Then our faith will grow stronger and stronger and stronger every day, that my eternal joy and bliss is at the lotus feet of Sri Radha and Krishna in the spiritual sky. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments?
Hare Krishna. Okay, thank you very much. Wonderful class. I always have this type of this doubt that we are, to some extent, we are convinced that this material body is not going to help us. And we, to some extent, after hearing again and again in Srimad Bhagavatam, we get a little bit conviction also that we have to just do the needful. But some point of time, Maya tricks us in such a way that this material body, they support us in our devotional life. They give us good support to some extent, pull on our devotional service. And due to that reason, we get a little bit attracted to this material body, because we feel it that this body is going to take me back to Godhead. So with that philosophy, we get attached to the body. And little bit we do the attachment, and then the material body tries to give us a check in such a way that we get a big setback by doing some sense enjoyment. So how to see to it that although you get little bit support from the material body to pull on with devotional service, at the same time you don't get attracted in such a way that it becomes an obstacle in your devotional life?
And as you are asking this question, I was somehow with this, the words of a great Vaishnava, Prabhupada's disciple called Praghosh Prabhu, came to my mind. Praghosh Prabhu, those of you who know him, he was here in the last year, last year, suffered from a very terrible disease called lymphoma, a cancerous disease. And by the time it was detected in his body, it was huge 10 kilo tumor in his abdomen. And he went through chemotherapy cycles, 6 cycles and all that. And he was living here in the temple, and he inspired many devotees by his extraordinary Krishna consciousness, even in the situation where he was probably going to not even survive with such a huge tumor. But then he said a very wonderful thing. He said, Prabhu, this body is designed for pain. He said very clearly. Now he's a dying man. He has this tumor, huge sized, and no doctor is promising him that he'll get cured. He did get cured by Krishna's mercy. At that point of time, didn't have a hope that something so large and entangled into all your organs would be ever get, you know, resolved by some medication. He said, for example, just think of an elbow, he was saying. The elbow, does it ever give you any pleasure? But if you bang into something or fractures, it is definitely going to do terrible pain. Certain parts of our body don't give any pleasure. The knee, does it give any pleasure? Or our thighs, do they give any pleasure? Or this pinna, this cartilage, does it give any pleasure? But a small pus boil or this cartilage here, does it give any pleasure? Is this body actually giving us pleasure all the time? No. Our hair, these eyelashes, they give us pleasure? Do our lips, they generate pleasure? No, they don't generate any pleasure. Our back muscles, our spinal muscles, our vertebrae, do they give us pleasure? But they are the seat of so many diseases, and definitely they are designed for generating pain. Any medical science person will tell you that there are fibers in our body which are called as, there are fibers, nerve fibers, A, B and C type fibers are there. The C-type fibers are called as, they are pain-carrying fibers. There aren't any pleasure-carrying fibers in the body only. Any doctor will tell you, there are C-type fibers are called as pain-carrying fibers. They're only designed for pain. It's a fact. It is not something which Acharya is just hammering us with to make us, yeah, if you're saying it must be true. But it is proved. By medical science, there are only pain pleasure fibers. There are no pleasure fibers. Prabhupada says, at best, pleasure is only negation of misery. That's the best definition of pain you can get in the material world. If you're not diseased with cancer and, you know, you don't have a long debt of HDFC on your head, you know, and if you don't have a nagging wife or a terrible children, and if you don't have all these things, I'm happy. But there is no positive pleasure in this world. There cannot be. There cannot be. It's just negation of pain. So when we keep hearing regularly, even this so-called thin line, you know, your questions are always like that. You know, this thin. Where do you draw the line, wala cheez? And I think it's the same answer which Maharaj gives you all the time. It is just by keeping our intelligence completely sharpened, as you always do by a regular shravanam. That's our only hope. And you're right when you say that we tend to think this body can give us pleasure because it's an instrument, and you know, there's a philosophy called as yukta vairagya. And you know how Mayadevi tells us, this is body is for yukta vairagya, Prabhu. You're using this body for Krishna's service. It's actually nirmanda Krishna sambandhe yukta vairagya. This is, you connect this to Krishna and then this body is to help you. So the yukta vairagya philosophy becomes very attractive to us because it helps us to take care of this body and all that. But you find the great acharyas, they don't talk of yukta vairagya in that connection. As Prabhupada says here, we should be willing to live up our bodies. See the words of Prabhupada. It's very clear what Prabhupada wants us to, what our mindset should be. He said, a devotee is always ready to do what? To give up his material body. Always ready. If death comes now, anyway, I remember another pastime now. One of our very great devotees, And we'll end with this because this is worth remembering. Because many of our devotees living in this temple have given us lasting examples to follow. One of our great devotees was Abhiram Gopal Thakur Prabhu. Many of us, the older devotees, know him. He was one of our first Vanaprastha devotees in our temple. In fact, he started this ashram here. He was living in Karachi, Pakistan. And he came here. His wife, I think, had died, and he lived in a saffron here. And he was affected by cirrhosis of liver. Cirrhosis of liver, and he was bleeding from his abdomen. And then he was treated partly at Bhaktivedanta Hospital. Then he came back in the same evening. He had another bout of bleeding, and he couldn't go to Bhaktivedanta, so he was rushed to Bhatia. But he reached there, and all those gadgets were around him. He was in the ICU, and all the stuff was going on, and everything else was to make him survive, all the life-saving drugs and all that. And you know what his last words were? This is what Prabhupada says, that he did it. As he could perceive, being a great yogi devotee, he could perceive that death is come. He could see death. He just, in his almost like a semi-conscious state, he has lifted his arms and said, "Radharani, I am ready." His last words. "Radharani, I am ready." Look at this, what Prabhupada is saying. A devotee is always ready to give his body. This is exactly the same word spoken by Abhiram Gopal Thakur Prabhu. "I am ready." And Prabhupada said the same thing when he left his body also. "Kuch ichha nahi." That means, "I am ready. I have no other desires." What is Vitrasura saying here? "I have no desires. I am ready." He is ready to go back to Godhead. When you come to that platform, you don't have to go back to Godhead because you're already there. So devotee has to become so much fixed in his resolve that if death comes today, we can fold our hands and say, "Yes, today I am ready." In whatever shape and form it comes. And it will come. Sometimes not even through a cancer, a slow process of death like cancer. It may come like Kamalakrishna Maharaj. It just came suddenly. He was driving, and then within the next few seconds, he was gone. That means we have to live our every moment in a very, very diligent and vigilant way. Because we don't know when that axe will fall and the thread will break. We don't know. So we have to be ready. Prabhupada says in this purport, anytime. And that can only happen if we keep on hearing from Prabhupada again and again and again. Abhiram Gopal Thakur Prabhu ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanandi.